Hello, this is the Business Marketing Club podcast. If you've heard us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. If this is the first time you've heard us, you're very welcome. In each episode, we offer insight and inspiration on a key current topic, advice on how to climb the career ladder, and top networking tips for the business marketing community. My name's Dave Stevens. I'm a business marketer and chair and co-founder of the Business Marketing Club Community Network. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Helen Kensett, the founder of CogniClick and author of the book Sales Mind, for an expert view of lead generation. Heather Heefner, the principal at Dart Studio, will propound a lesson that we can take from the COVID crisis, and director of Status Social, Mark Saxby, will share some great examples of business marketing and what he's learned from them. Lots to like, share and follow here, so let's get started. Today, we are marketing in a downturn. And when marketing in a downturn, attention necessarily focuses on lead generation. So what techniques work best for driving acquisition in a recession? I'm joined by Helen Kensett, who's founder of CogniClick and author of the book Sales Mind. Helen, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Dave. Thank you very much for having me. I'm a big fan.
So, oh my goodness, I've not had a fan before.
Well, a fan of you and the podcast, of course.
Of course. To spare my blushes, let's focus on you and tell us a bit about CogniClick.
Okay, sure. So CogniClick is an interactive content platform that enables B2B marketers and publishers to create live and interactive campaigns. So to give you an example, our live benchmarking tool enables a B2B audience to compare their opinions and concerns around a key industry topic live and in real time, and compare their opinion on each question, and then receive a personalized report based on their individual data. So I started my career in sales, so came into marketing as a consultant with a sales focus. And this was in 2015, and I was frustrated that content marketing at the time, and still now to some degree actually, wasn't quite generating either the volume or the quality of leads that were required by sales. So I needed to change this, as I had sort of several hungry clients that wanted leads, not just engagement. So along with my co-founder, Stephen Godson, we started to think about, you know, how to change this static content for clients, and we started to create interactive content, bespoke, and we did this using questions to enable leads to self-qualify. We've now developed the platform, which is the CogniClick platform, and B2B brands can now create their own highly engaging interactive campaigns, and our most effective is the live benchmark.
Okay. So another possible response to the content marketing situation that you found yourself in a couple of years back, perhaps, was your book Sales Mind, which offers insights to step up selling. And obviously, in these times, there's a revived focus on this for marketers. So what's your top tip for B2B marketers who want to grow sales?
Yeah, so... Sales Mind was published in 2016, and it's around very much about the psychology of how we sell. The book is divided into 48 different sales tips, and my favorite of these, which I think is a very useful one for B2B marketers, is called Taste It. And I use this every day in my selling. I use it very regularly. It's also built into the psychology of the CogniClick platform. So to explain more, I notice that marketers are very much creating great messaging, great campaigns, but they tend to, I see this a lot, make it very hard for prospects to say yes. They'll create a long white paper or a wonderful webinar full of value for the prospect. But the next step tends to be, you know, a demonstration of the product or the service, or something even more pushy than that. So what I mean by Taste It is enabling your audience is thinking about a way to enable your audience to try you, to taste you, to try some of your value in your business without feeling sold to immediately. And I think in this climate, I mean, I've been, since my very early days in sales, many, many years ago, it was certainly a technique that I was using. But increasingly in this climate, becoming more and more of a valuable way to enable your prospects to essentially touch your organization, feel the value in your organization without feeling sold to. So it's about reducing the size of that first step following the initial engagement with the prospect. All businesses can do that of any size. You just need to think about what your business could offer. Something, for example, 30 minutes free consultancy, or we ran a campaign about a year ago actually that was highly successful, and we offered a free idea to prospects following a campaign. And in our technology, in the CogniClick platform, the way that we've incorporated this is including several opportunities to include a call to action, a small and sensible and easy to access call to action for the prospect. Okay. So that's what I mean by taste it.
Okay, great tip. So given that we're in a recession, should we think about lead generation as a process differently today?
Yes. I mean, lead generation has always been incredibly important to a marketer's role. It's always been a function which has been a priority. But obviously in this climate, it's not easy. But there are a few things that we're doing at CogniClick and suggesting to our clients that are making a big difference.
Before we get there, can we just explore a bit about why lead generation is different now?
It is more difficult and more challenging in this climate. Because budgets are restricted and tighter. So, to get somebody's attention when they've got less money to spend on products and services is harder work.
Yeah.
So that's obviously a key reason. But also, aside from the economic climate that we're in, it's increasingly noisy online.
Yeah.
There are only so many webinars that our prospects can watch.
Really difficult to be distinctive, isn't it?
That's right. There are only so many white papers that we have time to read, however interesting they are. So actually, in this climate when budgets is more restricted and we need to get that engagement because we need to generate those leads, probably from a niche audience than we did before, because, we need to make sure that we're going to the audience that have actually got budget or a sensible budget for our products. Then we need to be thinking differently about what we're doing, and we need to be making our activity work harder.
Cool, thank you. So sorry, I interrupted you because you were going to talk about reasons.
Yeah, so there's a few things that we're doing. Firstly, we're focusing on sectors where there's growth. I mean, I'm sure a lot of you in B2B marketing are already doing this. So we're not expecting too much out of retail and travel at the moment. But there's a lot of sectors where growth is still very strong. And we're focusing a lot of our attention on creating campaigns for those sectors. One tip to do this is to look at LinkedIn and to see who's hiring, to see the sorts of organizations that are growing and that are worth targeting. That's a good place to start. Another thing that we're doing is thinking about how to increase engagement as a priority. So one way is about tailoring our content rather than a one-size-fits-all approach to our campaigns and content, which works potentially in more buoyant times. Focusing content on more niche audiences, creating content specifically for that audience, and also enhancing personalization as much as possible. So the content that our prospects are reading is as relevant as it could possibly be to the pain points of that audience. So by doing that, we're seeing engagement rates increase, which is really important in this climate. And finally, we're helping sales more. So giving them better qualified, less leads. There's a big obsession around volume of leads in B2B marketing as opposed to quality. Around essentially to some degree focusing on quality and not generating the right quality for our sales, which they so desperately need. And this kind of leads on to the idea of the numbers that we're measuring in lead generation. We need, as when we're looking at lead generation, as in B2B marketing, you know, we need to create our own measurement of success and not kind of copy other organizations. So how we measure conversion rates and cost per lead need to be our own unique numbers. You know, some organizations might be happy with generating a lead at £50, let's say, whereas other organizations maybe £500 per lead, it may be £5,000 a lead. It's important that we know our own numbers, and rather than trying to compete with other organizations around those numbers, actually look at improving our own numbers. And I think that's really important in this climate, you know, to know our numbers that are relevant to our business, rather than to look at the wider industry and try and compete on that level.
And what sort of difference can the examples that you've cited there make to things like conversion rate?
Okay. A great deal of difference, actually. So the second example, which I gave you around looking at tighter audiences and more niche content and personalizing that content. Well, when we're incredibly busy, you know, we might see a white paper and find it increasingly, you know, it wants to understand it, want to listen to it, want to read it. But actually, if that white paper is specifically tailored to our business, then we're much more likely to want to actually spend the time looking at that. So in terms of engagement rates, I mean, what we find, without wanting to talk, you know, too much around CogniClick, what we find with CogniClick is because we provide a personalized report as opposed to a kind of general, here is a report on this issue, we provide a report which has data specifically to that individual. 65% of users who start a live benchmark convert and request the personalized report. So, you know, personally within CogniClick, we're experiencing a great deal of success using personalized content to niche audiences as opposed to more general content around the subject.
And can these changes be made by all sizes and shapes of business?
Yeah, absolutely they can. So these, in terms of personalizing content, in, you know, there's a big movement towards ABM, account-based marketing, which, you know, it is around existing clients to some degree and upselling them, but it's very much a similar scenario, but on the kind of sharper end of the funnel, creating content for colder prospects that's relevant to them is possible in the largest of organizations as well as the, you know, the smallest of startups, B2B startups, and will make all the difference. I mean, it's essentially, it's about increasing the value to the user and shortening the time that they have to put into reading it. So if you're personalizing a piece of content, you know, you are essentially saying, this is absolutely valuable and relevant to you as an organization, and you're saying, and it's, you know, and it's very, if you read it, the value that you're going to get out of it is, you know, going to be, you know, be very worth it. So it's making it far easier but giving them far more value, and that's, you know, that's going to make a big difference whether you are a startup through to a large enterprise. Absolutely.
Helen Kensett, founder of CogniClick, thank you very much. The COVID-19 crisis has impacted every business, and it's been a moment of truth for the way that businesses communicate internally. I'm joined by Heather Heefner, who is principal at Dart Studio. Heather, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Dave. I'm glad to be here.
So what elements should be put in place to manage internal comms during a crisis?
Well, the very first element needs to be empathy. Okay. And what I mean by empathy is not sympathy, you know, not poor you, but how can you get in the shoes of the people that you're working with or who are working for you?
Right.
How can you understand their concerns, where they're coming from? And how can you have compassion for them? So maybe someone that is working for you or your coworker has a two-year-old. Wow, that changes everything. I do not have a two-year-old. I have older kids, and I'm actually very grateful for that during this pandemic. But that if you can internally, if you can think about your team and have and develop different strategies to have empathy, that's the number one. Empathy doesn't mean that you let people off the hook or that you can solve their problems. It just means you approach them from a different lens.
And I guess it means too that you can, with any crisis, you can kind of put in place the groundwork before the crisis happens just by building up that understanding beforehand.
Absolutely. And, you know, a sign of a good culture before COVID was an empathetic culture. And one thing that we're noticing is in business, I'm from Minnesota in America. In America, business has traditionally been bottom line results, numbers. But what we're learning now more is leaders need more emotional intelligence. And that's becoming more of a cultural norm, which I'm very grateful for. And part of that emotional intelligence is the art of listening and the art of creating empathy with the people that you work for.
Can you give us an example of where having that emotional intelligence has made a difference in a business?
Absolutely. I can give you a contrasting example. How does that sound?
That sounds great.
Okay. So one of my clients that I worked with this particular individual is high up in his business and he did not have a high level of emotional intelligence. He yelled a lot at people. He was not aware of the aggression that he showed. His emails were very blunt and harsh, and he did not understand the problem. So I coached him for several months on becoming aware of his language, and he did improve. However, he had already developed a reputation of someone who was aggressive and mean. And the result was people didn't want to work with him and they ended up not listening to him and ignoring him or running away from him. So it was actually harder for him to get things done.
Yeah.
And then more anger was happening in the office. So that's a bad example. A good example is I'm currently working with the COO of a large company in the Midwest, and I'm blown away by his emotional intelligence. He walks when we could, he walked around the office and he got to know people. He got to know people all the way from the person who was making people's lunches in the cafeteria to, you know, his team. He would ask them questions about themselves. And so he developed relationships with people, but then when there was a problem, which, you know, there's always problems in the office, he was able to look at it from many different perspectives and was very willing to do audience analysis on the different issues, especially if it was complicated, and work with me on charts to see which audience needed special kind of treatment or a special way of being communicated with. As a result, now during COVID, this company, the employees are ready to go. They're willing to make sacrifices. There isn't a lot of there's business upheaval. Their profits have gone down tremendously like everyone. But the culture seems confident that they're going to come back and that they're going to be taken care of. And that's true.
That's great, because you've given in those two contrasting instances there an understanding of just how much empathy really impacts the organization around you, and kind of once you've cast your stone, that position is difficult to then change.
It's very true. And right now I'm studying return to work communication, because some people are returning to work. And one thing that McKinsey and Company talks about, they're a research firm I really respect, is people need a room in the office if they do come back for these kinds of conversations, for these kinds of feeling empathetic conversations. It's part of trauma. We've all gone through trauma to varying degrees. And the trauma research says that we need to express it to each other. And so if you already have an empathetic culture coming in, you can create circles, you know, circles of trust, so to speak, with your team and say, so how is COVID affecting you? What is hard? What is hopeful? And have that area. It's not counseling. It's just a way to be open and then you get to work.
And it's important not to lose sight of that, given all of the different kind of medical specifications we also need to comply with as a business.
Absolutely. And even talk about that, you know, I don't like the social distancing. It makes me feel not very human. That's okay to say. And it's okay for someone else to say, I know, but we need it. My husband is sick. You know, I don't mean to laugh, but you know, that those hard conversations, we need room, and we need to feel safe right now, especially.
It's always inspiring to talk to you. Heather Huebner, principal at Dart Studio. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave. Pleasure to be here.
There's some great business marketing out there, and I'm joined now by Director at Status Social, Mark Saxby, to talk about it. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
So what would you say are the key principles of good B2B marketing?
So I would say the first key principle is actually have a strategy. I think sometimes with marketing, we think that there is a kind of a one size fits all, and we throw traditional marketing mixed in with social media marketing, and we mix the two up. And the trouble is that they're so different. Traditional marketing is often interruption marketing, while social media marketing, when done well, should really be about one-to-one marketing. It should be about people coming to you rather than you going to them. So the first principle, I think, to recognize is that actually you need to have a separate strategy to normal marketing that you do for social media. The next thing is to think about actually who's your target audience. And as a result, if you know who your target audience is, how are you going to talk to them, and where are you going to find them? So understanding that target audience, and understanding that target audience isn't necessarily all of your target audience. So let's say, give you an example. You might be a company that you think you're right. My aim as a business is to get in with architects. So you think, okay, right, well, I'm going to do a series of posts which are aimed at architects, but really, is your target audience really architects, or is it a certain type of architect? And how niche do you need to go to actually really get to the people you want to get to? Who are the people, the architects, who are going to make a real difference to your business? So are you looking for maybe architects from a certain size of practices, certain types of practices, certain locations of practices? So that second principle of really, I suppose, niching down your target audience and thinking, right, okay, if that's my target audience and that's the key one, how am I best going to reach them? And it may not be social media at all, but if it is, how are you going to find them? How are you going to engage with them? And focus on that one target audience rather than trying to go for a massive kind of hitting everybody and putting loads of stuff out and hoping somebody's going to see it. Go for a smaller target audience. So I think those two things, I think, are the key areas of social media, is knowing why you're doing it and knowing who you're doing it to. And then the rest then is kind of following on.
So actually your kind of view of that, the key principle of good B2B marketing is hold off from B2B marketing and do the strategy and the targeting first.
Absolutely, because if you don't get that right, what a waste of time. I mean, I hear so many people who are spending hours or employing people to spend hours on social media. They get no results back, or they have no idea what results they're getting back, which is, I think, probably even worse. And as a result, they just get dissatisfied with it, or they measure the wrong things, or as I say, they're just wasting their time. And if you're going to do anything, we always say this: if you're going to do social media, then do it properly, or don't do it at all. It is an utter waste of your life if you're doing social media if it's not really working for you. So what is your strategy? Who is your target audience? And then after you've got your target audience, you think, okay, what is the thing? What do they want to hear? What do they want to know? What kind of relationship do they want to have? And, you know, I see it again and again on LinkedIn, where somebody, you know, you'll connect to somebody and you'll suddenly get a message from them saying, oh, do you want to buy from me? Do you want to buy from me? Do you want to buy from me? That's not social media. Social media is about relationship building. You know, if you're walking down the street and somebody says, right, I'm from that shop there, do you want to buy from me? You know, you're going to push him away, aren't you? You're not going to want to talk to him. If you're in the pub, which is probably maybe more equivalent to social media marketing, you're in the pub and you're drinking a pint, somebody comes over and says, you know, do you want to be my, can I be your accountant? Well, you wouldn't do that. So why do people do it on social media? It's because they don't have a strategy, they don't understand the target audience, and they don't understand the value that they need to bring to people to get them, to win them round.
So let's take that apart a little bit. So let's start with strategy. So it's all very well saying, oh, well, have a strategy. What do you mean by that? What are the kind of bases that you would expect to see in a marketing strategy that would make you then content to service them with some social media?
So I think the so obviously we talked about target audience. The second thing I would think about is actually understanding the social networks and how they work and what they do to make them work for you. So a good example would be, you know, a lot of B2B businesses think that Facebook is a waste of time. But actually, when we look at recruitment, Facebook is one of the most powerful tools for recruitment. And when done well, you can save an absolute fortune using Facebook. But a lot of people don't understand how Facebook can be used for recruitment. So therefore, then it's kind of thrown away. So understanding the network is really important. The other thing I would say is about tone of voice. You know, what is the tone of voice you're using on social media? And should it differ? Do you want it to differ from what goes on your website or how the rest of the company speak? Are you speaking to people the way they want to be spoken to? So a tone of voice, really important. I'd also look at the kind of the tactics, the day-to-day tactics. And if you're going to come up with a strategy, are you really going to have somebody, do you need somebody who's going to be doing it, you know, 7 hours a day? Do you need somebody who's going to be doing it for 1 hour a day? What's the time need in the business? How much do you need to put in to get out? And also, what budget are you willing to spend on, say, on advertising or on staffing? You know, there is a lot to go into a social media strategy, but we've got to sit back first and say, right, what if I'm going to do this campaign, if I'm going to do this properly, what do I need to have in place to make it work for me? Have I got the knowledge? What is missing to make it work for me?
Isn't there the sense, though, that I have to do a bit of social media marketing to get the experience to then create the strategy?
You could say that, but is that not the wrong way of doing it? I'm just thinking, if I was setting up a business from scratch today, forgetting the fact that when I set up 9.5 years ago, I didn't do this at all. You know, I would sit down and I'd say, okay, what is my target audience? How am I going to reach them? How am I going to win them over? What's my margins going to be? How am I going to make it work? How am I not going to be, you know, starving in 3 months' time because I've wasted my money? So why do we do the same with social media? Why do we play with it for so long? Why do businesses just not get it? You know, we were approached by a company a while ago who were a global business, and but it was the UK area that approached us, and they said to us that I've been told by my managing director that I need to get a company to help us with our social media, because our American counterparts have got a million likes on Facebook, and he wants to have the same. And I said, what about KPIs? What about sales? What about results? And she went, no, all he's interested in is whizzes and bangs and a million likes. So can you deliver them? Well, you know, what can you say about that? We didn't do that. We didn't work with them.
So why do you think it is? Do you think it's because social media is still a relatively young channel and therefore less well understood than other aspects of marketing?
I think there's an element of that. I think that there is a certain type of person, and I don't think it's generational, because I think actually a lot of people we work with are actually over the age of 50, because often they're the people who recognize that they don't know what they don't know. And so therefore then they try and find out. But I do think that sometimes a type of person who thinks, actually, social media is too confusing for me. I've done things in a traditional way, and therefore then I don't want to look into social media. And then I think there's sometimes the opposite way, where there's younger people particularly who have grown up with social media, but from a personal point of view. And because of that, they think they know it all because they've used Facebook with their mates. But what they haven't done is use it in terms of as a business tool. And I also think as well that one of the key things that you know, and it's a challenge for us, is that to have somebody running your social media isn't really about understanding social media. It's about life skills. It's about understanding people. It's about winning people over. You know, writing a great social media post on whatever platform, whether it's LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or anything else in between, you've got to understand people to know what's going to make them engage and how to win them over. And I think, unfortunately, I think there's a real lack of skills in the industry. And a lot of people who are in social media are younger people who haven't got that life experience. Now, it doesn't mean that anybody young is not going to be good enough at doing social media, because absolutely there are some amazing young people out there who can do it. But I still think there is a lot of people being put into the wrong seat in businesses who are doing social media without really being given maybe the training or the experience, or maybe they're just not the right people in the first place.
What about looking to the future, Mark? Are you optimistic that social media will become more strategic in the future?
I think so. I think I would say in terms of the inquiries that we're getting as a business now, they are more serious. They're converting quicker, and we're getting much more than we ever did outside lockdown, which says to me that businesses are taking social media seriously. And I think because of that, they're already coming to us and saying, we know that we need to be strategic. We know we need not to waste our time. We're not just playing with it. So for me, that gives me a lot of hope that businesses are thinking that way. There'll always be people who will mess it up. Let's be honest with it. I mean, that's life, isn't it? But fortunately, there are businesses, and most of my inquiries are in the B2B space, because to be honest, I think that's where the greatest bits of excitement are a lot of the time in social media. The gains you can have. I mean, we got contact to one of our clients. He was telling me after his LinkedIn training, he'd made £600,000 worth of business. You think, wow, how cool is that? That's awesome. You know, you don't get that with a B2C business so quickly. So I think B2B companies have got so much to gain from great social media.
Great to hear from you. Mark Saxby, Director of Status Social. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's it. That's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, to Helen Kensett, Heather Heefner, and Mark Saxby. Thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, and Josh Bench. And thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community run by B2B marketers for B2B marketers. So you can check out our other webinars, podcasts, events, mentoring, blogs, newsletters, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. I'm Dave Stevens. Thanks for listening.